And it's episode 57, Joshi 2010's Journey. I'm JD. And yes, we're finally doing it. It is Catch the Wave 2012, the albatross of, well, the entire kind of Joshi watching community, at least in terms of retro. This show was nearly impossible to get a hold of, but after much thanks to members of the Patreon, patreon.com/redleafretrocast, I am eternally grateful for the help in acquiring this, and now I get to review it for you guys and myself. Got to watch it. It's four long DVDs worth of Joshi Wrestling. And in 2012, Wave put on easily their best tournament to date. The Catch the Wave started in 2009. Your winners started with Yumi Oka, Booker Woman, followed in 2010, which we covered Gammy, highlighted at the end by shoving money in Kurihara's face in a joking manner, filled with a lot of comedy and not taking anything seriously. 2011, we got a little better, but still kind of underwhelmingly booked. But Kana won that one, and now we are in 2012, sticking with the multi-block format. And in so far on this journey, we didn't cover 2009, but we covered 10, 11, and now 12. Three blocks, which included, well, Wave likes doing these blocks in some sort of gimmick or shtick. And in this case, in this year, we have the two stables that make up Wave in 2012 having their own blocks. The Black Dahlia block, which is the heel group knockoff light version of Ozaki-gun. The White Tails group, which is essentially the faces that oppose them. Which consist, well, I'll go over the people that are in it a little bit later, but, and then we have a third kind of rogue block, filled with outsiders, if you want to put it that way, is the power block, which they, you know, the claim is that they're also powerful wrestlers. Five people in each block, but in the case of, these three blocks, it was spread out from April 30th to July 16th, a long, long tournament, at least time-wise, with it all. And where this comes into play, if you look at kind of the archive of Wave from those dates, it's not as many shows as you think it could be. It is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 shows, 10 shows. And that's all they do. From the April 30th Korakuen Hall, in which mostly covered due to the Toshi Yamatsu retirement show, which we covered on this podcast, and talking about how Wave got basically their largest attendance to date. I spoke very highly of it. In that past episode of You Want to Put Your Best Foot Forward, most eyes on the tournament. And now that that has happened, they actually got 1,400 to that show. And I was praising the idea of it, but I really came away with it disappointed because of the tournament matches they put on there and in the time frame that they did. However, watching at least one of the matches, it paid off, and the other two were kind of nothing. It was a 4-minute match, an 8-minute match, that's the good one, and then a 3-minute match. There was also a tag match of Gammy and Tomoko Nakagawa taking on a Black Dahlia duo of Nakamura and Ohada in a 20-minute match. Now, on the surface, that may not seem like a whole lot, but going through the schedule of all these Wave shows, and the DVDs don't lay out the full shows. Like, we're not watching 10 shows worth of wave here. We're watching the four DVDs, which consist of all the Catch the Wave matches. When you go a little bit deeper and you check out that first Cork and Hall Catch the Wave opener, if you will, and me saying they didn't put their best foot forward, that Gammy tag turns out to be a theme of many of those 10 shows, where she is in the opener or the main event or somehow situated in the most prominent position on the show, Yumi Oka, give or take, flip a coin along with her. But Gammy ends up winning the tag titles with Tomoko Nakagawa. She's not even in the Catch the Wave tournament, and yet she's always taking up the most time throughout many of these shows in 20-minute tags, goofy comedy matches that last a long time. And this is one of my major criticisms of Wave that kind of carries over into the modern era here in 2023, where when it comes to making these cards for Pro Wrestling Wave, the focus is never on what it needs to be when it needs to be. So, for example, if Ayumi Kurihara, Kana, Misaki Iwata, Ryu Mizunami, like these people are your focal point over the next 3 months, you would think that you would have your winners or final four kind of chosen at that time, and you want to put them in the most prominent positions because they are going to be the focal points of you selling tickets later and, well, building them up to be the stars of your promotion. But instead, it's a disease of a lot of, well, wrestling that you see the bookers or friends of the bookers, and in Joshi Wrestling's case, it's a lot of book your friends rather than let's try to make money, let's try to make stars, let's do what's best for the industry. It's never the latter, it's usually the former. And you can tell which shows sell better. At least, of course, I'm going off a surface value of, you know, I wasn't there at the time. This is a retrospective. I'm looking at the analysis of the numbers and whatnot. But the shows that do the best were not focused on Gammy in particular, even though. So I'm going to pull up some of these cards here. Actually, I might even pull them all up. So we went over the Cork and Hall, where Gammy was in a tag match that took up almost more time than the retirement match on the show for Toshi Yamatsu. Non-title, by the way. That was followed by an Itabashi Green Hall attendance of 125, with Gammy in the main event in a tag, with the Catch the Wave matches in the undercard taking up much less time. Randomly on that same show is Yumi Oka and Yu Yamagata in a singles match. Kind of strange that you'd format it that way, but Wave tends to not make sense in a lot of aspects for that. Shinkiba First Ring was the next show, 148 in attendance. That's pretty damn low. Which had no Gammy on the show at all, with an Ayumi Kurihara Shushi Bitani main event. Now, I can totally understand the thinking behind that. Shushi Bitani and Kurihara have kind of been a focal point of Wave, at least in terms of the young stars on the rise. I'll put young in quotes, because Kurihara and Shushi Bitani at this time are not young by any means. They're not, you know, 20, 25 years old. They're kind of, you know, well, how old was Shushi Bitani exactly at this time? Let's see. Of course, doesn't have their birthday. All right. I'm going to estimate she was 26, 27, kind of in her prime. Well, if you go back to last year when she was coming back from her injury, this is Shushi Bitani, she's been booked like a loser. And when you book people like losers, no matter their fan support and popularity, at least in, let's call it a fan club sense, when you finally put them in positions to draw the house, make money, get the job done in that sense, it tends to not work as well as you for some reason have it in your head it would, right? And then I'm looking up and down in this card, and it's kind of filled with a lot of that. But I'm picking on Shushi Batani a lot, but that's kind of the case there. We go back another week forward. It's Shikimba first ring again, 181, with Yumi Oka and Hanako Nakamori in the main event, with a Kana Shushi Batani match in the semi. Gami in the opener with Nakagawa getting the second to most minutes on the show, and then a Sakura Hirota match that went 17 minutes. Another wave criticism I have is way too much Sakura Hirota getting way too much time. She's not the stalwart of Wave just yet, but she's getting there. We move on to, that would be Catch the Wave final, so we don't want that one. That's not it yet. Getting there, though. Be patient. So we move on. Shinkiba first ring again, third straight show, and we're seeing a little bit of a difference here from years past, but they are ramping up. This is main evented with a Gami trios match, 224 in attendance. So you can interpret this now two ways at this point. Your stars aren't over, that's why you didn't draw the house. And you think Gami and company are the draws, because this is Gami and Bambi, Misaki. It's a Black Dahlia trio against this ragtag group in the main event going 20 minutes. And maybe your Catch the Wave isn't the draw that you kind of want it to be, so you're changing up the format. You could absolutely make that argument. I'm making the argument that because of the way they've booked everyone else and no one's hot and everyone's perceived as not main event caliber players, it's all about can they even gain enough crowd support, fan support to surpass the people that you've kept on top. That's what I'm arguing. So, yes, indeed, attendance is rising with Gami being more prominent in a main event role. We move on to Shikimba first ring again. It's moving up, 274. This time you have Yumi Oka in the main event again. So we continue on. Is Yumi Oka a prime player of this promotion? Well, yes. She was booked years ago to win, and she's always at the top. Now, could you have done better if you did book Yumi Oka over a lot of the veterans and actually have her get wins? I think you could. But I would also be foolish to not mention in the opener, close to it, is a Wave tag title match for the vacant tag titles. Kurihara and Kana against Nakagawa and Gami, in which we remember this match, we covered that Kana and Kurihara lose to Gami and Nakagawa. So no Gami as tag champion. You always draw a little bit more with title matches, okay? That is a discernible fact of wrestling. We go to Osaka, so we're finally out of the Tokyo area and Shinkiba first ring. Another Wave tag title match opens. It's Apple Miyuki and Ninja Ranmaru in the opener, going 10 minutes. And then Ryu Mizunami and Hamada. And Hamada has a lot of credibility to her in the main event. This show does 438. They're easily their best show on the tour for Catch the Wave. It's in a new town. I can see why you'd get the local Osaka Pro Joshi people there. That's Ranmaru and Apple Miyuki. And then it's littered with Catch the Wave matches a variety of times. Okay? So this one is easily their best card. It has the most interest. It appeals to the local audience. I say good job with that one. Okay? Now we're nearing the end of the Catch the Wave tournament. Shinkiba first ring, 305. Their largest one. Gami and Nakagawa, second from the bottom again, with Sakura Hirota in the opener, taking on Kurihara and Ida. Okay? This was headlined by the Survival Battle Royal. So what happens is, they have three blocks. Each winner of the block gets an auto entry into the semifinals. Then, everyone who's been in the tournament to that point gets a last chance, so they don't have to win. They just win the Battle Royal, and they get in. So, not worth talking about, but Masaki Iwata comes away with the victory here. there was the one year where Gammy was in it, and it was filled with her comedy. I know I'm coming across like a Gammy hater, but she is kind of the case of the veteran that was never over, never the big star, and always puts them themselves in the position unbecoming of them, essentially. So, with the increased attendance as the tour went on, I would say that Wave gained steam from the Toshiyomatsu retirement tour, the Toshiyomatsu retirement house at Cork and Hall, and the more they stayed in Tokyo and the more the tournament slowly started coming together, I would be a betting man saying it gained some word of mouth among the fans to go to some of these things, because here's a spoiler. A lot of these matches are pretty good. And a lot of these matchups they do are pretty well done. Now, the Black Dahlia group, we'll get to that, not so good. But everything else was filled with a lot of intensity and action, which is important. And year over year, all these attendance numbers are up on the average show. 100 to 200, even 300 people in some cases. We go back to that 2010 Catch the Wave, and they had like 75% of Shikiba First Ring blacked out, no seats listed, like even on the hard camera side. It was dire. And that's why we call this podcast, this journey, Out of the Dark Ages of Joshi Wrestling. And we're seeing a company like Wave come out of it. And even though I have a lot of criticisms, and I'm being very critical of the way they book, or lack thereof, and the way that they don't really focus on a lot of young stars in the way they should, what they are doing are booking the young stars. We're seeing new people emerge in the scene, like a Masaaki Iwata, Ryu Mizunami, Kurihara, who was stuck in the shadows of Neo up until its folding. We're finally starting to see people shine more than they have before. Meanwhile, if we go over to like JWP, they're as I spoke on the last podcast, especially, they feel like they're kind of, they have a very good variety of the roster, but don't quite know where to position the right people, where, how to, like, the utilization seems a bit off. And then just to bring up like Oz Academy, well, we know enough about Oz Academy. We know what they're about. Like, that's kind of why I still cover Oz Academy, is they still have the potential and the largest audience to this point. And then Ice Ribbon is Ice Ribbon. Sendai has the earthquake they're dealing with, which is why we're seeing people like Ryu Mizunami and Kagetsu kind of break out of that. They're the ones that want to continue wrestling, and Sendai's in bad shape. So let me go over the participants in Catch the Wave here. In the Black Dahlia group, we have Hanaka Nakamori, Cherry, Tsukasa Fujimoto, Masaaki Iwata, and Yumi Oka. And I know what you're thinking. Why is Fujimoto in the Black Dahlia group? I don't recall Fujimoto ever being even on tour with Wave. Well, she's kind of a special guest to fill the role, if you will. And they just kind of stuck black wings on one of her gears and called her part of Black Dahlia for the moment. In the power group, it's Aya Yuki, so a rookie, Sawako Shimono, so the singlet power wrestler that isn't very good. We have The Ham, Hamaka Hoshi from Ice Ribbon as well, Ayaka Homada, and Ryu Mizunami. So the clear favorites of both these groups are Yumi Oka and Ayaka Homada. We're just kind of going with Booker Woman and the most veteran player. In the White Tails group, the babyfaces of Wave, it's a ragtag bunch. It's Kana, your returning Catch the Wave winner. Shuri from Wrestling New Classic. Yes, the company she used to be in is no longer. That's the Tajiri thing, we'll call it. Mio Shirai, whom hasn't, at this point, she hasn't quite signed with Ice Ribbon yet. She's still coming off the remnants of Triple Tails and hanging out with Kana. And then we have Shu Shibutani, the Wave Stalwart, and Ayumi Kurihara. So a number of winners can come out of this whitetail group. Is it the protected Shuri? Is it Kana going for another championship? Is it Kurihara, or the is this the big opportunity for Shushibitani to, since she's part of Wave, you think they'd maybe give her a huge opportunity here to maybe win a block? I, for one, have been on the train of what is the scene going to do with Ayumi Kurihara? I am so tired of it. And yes, I know who wins Catch the Wave 2012, but all my thoughts throughout parts of 2009, definitely 2010, and oh my God, let's do something with this woman, 2011. Ayumi Kurihara, to me, should have won this thing and had to have won this thing. I don't see how it could have been anybody else throughout this entire group. And if it was truly up to me, it would have been a Hamada Kurihara finals, in which Kurihara would pin that woman 1-2-3, no problem. Where the politics could come in to play is, well, Shuri's a big-time player, not freelancer, but she's signed and protected outside. So you can expect some, 15-minute draws, because that's where we're at. There's also the case of Ayaka Hamada herself. Is she going to put someone over, or is she going to have to go to some draws as well? The wacky sense of the Black Dahlia group is it's a heel group all against each other. What will that bring us? Well, they kind of have a weird out where they could just use weapons and cheat, which will keep everyone quote-unquote strong. There's kind of an advantage in that one, but it's also filled with nothing but young people and Yumi Oka. So take that for what it's worth there. I would say on the surface, these participants in this version of Catch the Wave is, I think, their best to date. And I think they're set up for success, so they choose it. And there's a reason why the attendance went up, and it's because of how they formatted it, how they were able to stick best wrestlers together, what would be the most interesting to the fans at the time, and it grew accordingly. My positions on how Gammy booked herself aside, there was a level of success I feel that Catch the Wave 2012 had, and doing things like this will carry you on forward throughout the year and build momentum for next year's Catch the Wave. You're making it a big deal. I think if there were improvements, obviously I would lay off on Gammy. If you want to have a tag title match, have your tag title matches. But no reason to have 20-minute matches in the mid-card or openers when nothing's on the line and you got to Catch the Wave to do. You know, there was a lot. I mean, on the surface, if you look at all the cards, you can see these times and go, there's a lot of 5-minute matches on this card, and then on others, why are there multiple 15-minute draws? We are, of course, dealing with a lot of freelancers. Maybe not a lot of people are signed to Wave, and you have to kind of just work with what you got and when you got these wrestlers booked, which, of course, then would be the advantage of a promotion, being able to sign a lot of these wrestlers so you don't have to deal with these limitations. So card structure-wise, and how you allocated the points, I'm going to be less critical on, because this is still 2012 and still things that need to be worked out. And I'm still learning a little bit in this case as well of how wrestling bookers have to get around a lot of these things. Now, could you simply ask the question, okay, then why not just make it a shorter tournament and 2 blocks and not deal with battle royals to negate everything you've done, or stick with all the people signed with your promotion first and foremost and book people to go over accordingly, and then you have a few freelancers that you can kind of stick in the bottom? Well, you could absolutely make that argument. That would make all the sense in the world. The problem is those freelancers, perhaps, especially in the case of Ayaka Hamada, maybe she doesn't want to lose. If she's got that veteran credibility and she could be booked anywhere at any time kind of deal. Got some difficulties to work out there. So how were these DVDs? How were the shows? I think I've spoken enough on Catch the Wave. I'll get to the finals here near the end of this episode. So I'm going to kind of go by the way the DVDs have everything have laid out, where DVD 1 was the Black Dahlia block. DVD 2, I'm calling the White Tails block. DVD 3, the Power block. And DVD 4 is the Decision Matches, Battle Royals, and the Catch the Wave final day at Corican Hall. So that's how I'm going to lay this out. We begin with the Black Dahlia block, and my thoughts over a lot of this is a lot of these matches suck, and they're on the verge of being bad at times. Anything went from around the 5 minutes to 8 minutes marking with a random match happening that's kind of made me baffled over why are we doing this in the first place, but here we go. Cherry defeats Yumi Oka in 3 minutes, and here's every single match in this tournament outside of, like, two of them, okay? One Black Dahlia member will get a cat of nine tails. They'll get in the ring, hit the other person a few times. They'll have some semblance of a match for a few more minutes. Maybe Cherry will get a bat. There's no other weapons of choices. At one time, Tsukasa Fujimoto had a red ball and swung it and missed. But a Black Dahlia member will get involved with a weapon. The ref will go, hey, I'm not counting the pin. And there'll be a few minutes of wrestling followed by another weapon shot. So many of these matches were like that and just were not interesting. When I saw Misaki Iwata against a young Hanako Nakamori, I was excited and then not very excited very fast. Ohada wins that one. Nakamori defeats Cherry in 5 minutes. Fujimoto defeats Ohada in almost a good match worth recommending. That went 12:38. Easily at that point, the longest one and the third longest in the entire block. And a lot of this has to do with Fujimoto just doesn't know what to do as any sort of a heel, even with weapons. So she'll just kind of sell and maybe take the weapon away, hit once, and throw it out of the ring. She was probably the best person to watch in this block until the final few matches. And even then, she was in it. So Fujimoto did very well in this tournament, strictly because she just didn't know how to work heel in the sense of Black Dahlia and Wave, which makes total sense because she's not really a member of it and she doesn't know how. So the Ohada-Fujimoto match was pretty okay. Then we got Ohada defeating Cherry, 8 minutes. Oka defeating Nakamori, 10 minutes. Cherry defeating Fujimoto in 8 minutes, which kind of left me confused considering. Fujimoto defeats Nakamori in a kind of a disappointing match. They're both very young into their careers in their sense. They go 8 minutes and kind of lost. Hanako Nakamori is very much in that same boat of potential as, say, Fujimoto, Arisa Nakajima, Misaki Iwata and company, but she has not developed at the same rate they have. And it's showing when, and you see this in how she formats her matches, how she goes about hitting her moves, and everyone's just kind of a step ahead of her. Do I think she's better than Cherry? I do. Absolutely do. I think Cherry was one of the worst people in this tournament, with bad submission games, a bat that constantly came into play, and she was there to be a fluke finish, slip on a banana peel, and she did that really only against Hanako Nakamori and Yumi Oka at the very start. Speaking of Yumi Oka, she beats Misaki Ohada in 13 minutes. This one had a little bit of heat to it. I enjoyed this one because they're the kind of two main members of Black Dahlia. Now, is it like a four-star classic? I'm nowhere near saying that. I mean, don't put words in my mouth. But in terms of how it was booked the year prior, and what it came down to, Oka kind of got a sense of revenge, if you want to headcanon that in there. And everyone is basically even on points to this point in time, which means the very last match on June 24th here, came down to the winner of Fujimoto and Yumi Oka. This was good. Again, Fujimoto. But the problem is with this one, it went to a 15-minute draw, and two things happen. Now, these exact same two people have to have a decision match. Okay? Fujimoto and Oka just never got out of even first or second gear. Maybe they just skipped right into second gear randomly after a weapon shot. But really, it was a lot of spinning wheels knowing that they were going to the draw. This is what I'd call a bad draw, on all accounts. It's one of those where you go, I'm not sure why you did that. And you go, well, wait a minute, JD. They were thinking that they'd go to the Catch the Wave finals, and you'd be able to have kind of book double duty, save some money there. The Battle Royal would be interesting to see whom would face maybe the winner of this, and then you'd have the Power and White Tails winners face each other. So you'd get that Cork and Hall a little bit more juice. Well, no, they booked the decision match on July 1st, which was 2.5 weeks prior to the Cork and Hall. So they were still having Power and White Tail block matches up until that point with the Battle Royal in the main event. There was no reason for that match to go to a 15-minute draw, especially with the result we went on to see later. It made no sense to why that was necessary. It protected nobody in the end. Very confusing. You can book another, or just hold off on, okay, hold on. Let's see here. That Fujimoto Oka draw was on June 24th. Okay, so it was the show just before their July 1st. And they weren't even the main event. They were the semi-main event. They could have absolutely had booked something completely different that day if you wanted to have one more match for the July 1st show. This was a baffling result and an example of a bad draw, I would say. Totally unnecessary. Very strange, and also they had another 15-minute draw on that exact same show. So now at that point, the audience had seen two 15-minute draws. That's just too much. I think that's poor planning. I think that's it's very poorly done and not looking ahead properly. I think we can all see that. Now, that means on that July 1st show, we get to talk about the decision match. And since that's not on the Cork and Hall, I get to say that the decision match on July 1st between Fujimoto and Oka was excellent. It went almost 17 minutes. Now, why was there a 15-minute draw on that one? Well, there has to be a winner, I guess. But Yumi Oka wins. There was a small moment at the beginning where they're both going for weapons. They kind of missed each other. And then they just had a straight-up fire of a match from there. There was a lot of big moves being hit. Possibly one of Tsukasa Fujimoto's best matches to date. And Yumi Oka's best match for quite some time that we've seen. Much better than her kind of overly selling to veterans that won't sell for her. Definitely better than anything else in this tournament and what she's done this year. And really a lot of kind of what I talk about and praise about Yumi Oka, where, look, if she's part of the book or at least the financial crew or head of Wave in some capacity, and she's in her 30s, she's in her prime, she's okay to be in a prominent position. I have no issue with that. And as long as you put her over properly and she gets the job done, bravo. And what she was able to do with Fujimoto and with Ohada before her, and even what was the other one? She had another good match. It was the Nakamori match, but that was more of like a veteran and a rookie who doesn't get it. But Yumi Oka did well. Yumi Oka did very well, and that Fujimoto Yumi Oka match, the decision one, I went 2 out of 3 on that. I thought it was very good and one of the better matches, Joshi matches of 2012. So the final block standings became Yumi Oka wins with 5 points, Tsukasa Fujimoto in second place with 5 points, Cherry and Ohada with 4, and Hanako Nakamori with 2. So your finals winner, or final, your semifinalist last year, second place, goddammit, was Misaki Owada, and she, look, it came down to kind of the final couple results, and Yumi Oka defeating Ohada got revenge from the year before, and not effectively knocked Ohada out. So a good little replay of last year. Even though I wasn't a fan of the block, and I thought a lot of the matches weren't very good, I think it ended well. We move on to the White Tails block, and holy hell, all of this is good. Now, Mio Shirai, unfortunately, has like a broken nose at this time, so she's extremely limited in what they can do in the ring. There's flashes of good from her, but ultimately it was, will Mio Shirai get rolled up or do the or will she get killed or will she roll you up? And that's how they play her role throughout the tournament. So her matches are quick, to the point, and they always kind of do something with the nose. There's the short version. The other version is Shuri. Shuri gets over the octopus stretch going down into a big, like a crucifix submission from that. And she's tapping suckers out. But Shuri also looks very rough around the edges. She's got this mouth guard that makes her look like she has vampire fangs. There's the Tachiri influence in her is strong at this point in time. Very much leaning into a submission and strike game she doesn't quite get yet. Look, Shuri's at the very beginning of her career, and she's gaining a lot of fan support. You can hear it in the crowd when she's in the ring, and she's protected. So having a green person that's protected the way she is from the outside makes for some rough goings in matches at times. Kana? Kana in this tournament didn't do as well as I was hoping. She was very motivated last year. I think it was clear that she was going to win. But in this tournament, she was always in first gear. She was very heavily going to the mat at times. Didn't really seem that motivated. She was there to kind of just be the body that maybe has some credibility. Some things are definitely going on with her in the scene right now in 2012, and being that she lost the tag title so early in Wave, I can kind of understand my assumption of mentality here. Now, what was Kana's best match? Well, it was the very first White Tails block. This was on that first Korakuen Hall on April 30th, the Yamatsu retirement show. It was Kurihara defeating Kana in 8 minutes. And these two just beat the hell out of each other and went at it, and it was phenomenal. It's a 2 out of 3 match, and if they would have went like 14 minutes, 13 minutes even, I could easily have seen it go into a 3 out of 3. Now, why in the hell wouldn't you book Ayumi Kurihara versus Kana in a higher role on that Korakuen to say, this is our Catch the Wave tournament, you come to our shows, you'll see a lot of shit like this, that's awesome. Don't know why you wouldn't do that. It doesn't make any sense to me, but that's what they chose to do. And then the second match for the White Tails block was Kurihara and Shushi Bitani, that main event I spoke about that didn't draw very well. Well, these two went 14 minutes 32 seconds, and Kurihara looks awesome, but she also looks like she's fighting through some sort of shoulder injury or arm injury, which, if you know your history, she ends up retiring due to like bad shoulder, clavicle injuries, like bad, like it gets bad for her. And I think we're seeing the signs of her having the wear and tear on her body, and the style that she does is taking its toll. But not in this match. What I was looking at was Shushi Bitani just being offbeat the entire time. And I really wish I could find the time to do a deep dive into Shushi Batani coming back from that injury better. But from what I've seen, she just has not been booked very well at all. She's been booked to lose a lot. She's always in tags, eating pins, and now she's given this main event with someone she has a big rivalry with. I mean, for Shibatani, it's Kurihara and Kana. Those are her rivals. And I had... So they faced each other a number of other times and had way better matches than this one here, so I can't recommend this one. Shuri defeats Mio Shirai 6 minutes. Kana defeats Shushi... Or, I'm sorry, Kana and Shibatani go to a 15-minute draw. That was very boring. They tried some things. There were some flashes of good, but mostly it was mat work. Shibutani not quite meeting the, I guess, expectation I had with Kana. So Shibutani was probably the biggest disappointment to me in this entire tournament. I am a fan of her. I like her little jean shorts gimmick. I see a lot of potential in her, but this tournament was not her best in-ring performances that we've seen to date out of her, which is a real shame. I hope maybe in the coming months we can see more out of her and get back to where I think she could be. Kana defeats Shuri in 12 minutes. Nothing like their rivalry from 2012, I'll put it that way. And this is what I was talking about with Kana. She was always in that first or second gear and nothing higher. Never went above. Actually, when I think about it, she kind of felt like she was a teacher in this whole tournament. She was there to get people by in a match and put in a good 10 minutes because Kana was in a lot of them. Mio Shirai rolls up Kurihara, 129. Shibutani and Shuri go to a 15-minute draw, another dull one and very sloppy. That was disappointing. Kurihara and Shuri go to a 15-minute draw. So on this DVD, yes, I did have to watch two straight 15-minute draws. And the boring, or in my opinion, boring Kana-Shuri match that went 12 minutes. And then Kana-Shibutani, 15-minute draw. This Whitetails block was littered with just long matches that just didn't deliver. And that's always a risk, too. So I criticized kind of two short matches. But maybe it's a double-edged sword. If they go too long, then it doesn't get the job done, especially if it's a 15-minute draw. You got to give me some fire. Wasn't feeling the fire. The Kurihara-Shuri match was missing a whole lot. I could tell that they had the energy for something bigger, but couldn't do a finishing stretch because of how they were limited with that time draw. Then I wonder, because the last minute was the way it was, and they're just trying to kick the shit out of each other, there was a brief moment where I thought, oh, if they would have done that for like the last 5 minutes after the 10-minute call, we could have been looking at something good. Mio Shirai rolls up Kana in 5 minutes. Shibutani, I think she rolled up Mio Shirai in 4 minutes. And then that's the Whitetail block. The final standings were Ayumi Kurihara wins with 5 points. Mio Shirai, Shibutani, and Shuri all tie with 4. So they all kind of just traded wins and got some draws. And then Kana last with 3. Not how I would have booked her. Not how I would have booked her at all, especially considering how often they do. I mean, it's fine if you want to put Mio Shirai kind of rolling someone up a few times. Even the Kana match is okay, but if I'm looking up and down this, I would have really just had Shuri just beat Kana, no problem, and then Kana can beat Mio Shirai. Just switch things up. You want to get someone over? Get someone over. But maybe it wasn't their call. Maybe it was a separate call. Would have had maybe even Shibutani beat Shuri. But again, these are the limitations and political things that you got to fight with. So I imagine it's just what they had to work with and work out points. So in terms of the matches, I would say the Whitetails block were, like, don't get me wrong, way better than the Power block I'm about to talk about and the Black Dahlia with the wacky cheating. I definitely feel like I'm being overcritical for a lot of things, but there was definitely an expectation factor I had in my head for the Whitetails group, and they didn't meet it. And I think a lot of that has to do with Kana being in first gear, Shuri still in development, Shibutani not being of the caliber that I think she's capable of, And Mio Shirai's injury kind of puts her in a pickle. So were the Ayumi Kurihara matches all good? Yes, they were. I think a lot of them were. And I think a lot of them did mostly live up to what I wanted. The best match, I would say, would be that opener of Ayumi Kurihara and Kana. After that, I guess it would be Kana and Shibutani, followed by Kurihara Shibutani. Then maybe the Shibutani Shuri match. Yeah, I'd have to kind of list them out ahead, but you get the idea. Power Block. Just going through the people again. Mizunami, Hamada, Shimono, Hoshi, and Yuki. This was rough. This was a lot of people throwing shoulder blocks. But goddamn it, was Ryu Mizunami heavily, heavily energized through a lot of this. She beats Shimono in 12 minutes. Hamada beats Ayuki in just under 15. The way Hamada worked in this was very strange. She was motivated, but only in certain aspects, and I'm noticing a trend with Ayaka Hamada matches where she's got her kind of four moves that she wants to hit, and she hits them on repeat, and then depending on the finish will be how hard she works at the end. So she never really works in between that kind of 6 and 15 minute mark. She's more or less on the cusp of 5 and the cusp of 15. A great example of that would be the Ayaka Hamada Sawako Shimono match, where it was meant to put Shimono over and getting a point at the very least at that point in time. But I didn't like hate any of the, well, I hated the Hoshi Hamada match. I thought that was a bad 5 minutes, but I never really had a problem with the Hamada matches more than I just never got excited for them. Ayako Hamada defeats Hoshi 5 minutes. Hoshi defeats Ayuki 6 minutes. That was the worst one in like possibly the entire tournament. Mizunami defeats Ayuki 4 minutes. So a lot of these are either the long or short in itself as well. Shimono and Hamada go to that draw. Shimono and Yuki go 7 minutes. Shimono wins. Mizunami and Ayaka Hamada was very high octane. Easily the best match in this entire block. Nothing else came close. 13 and a half. And then Shimono and Hoshi go to a short little 4 minute match on July 4th. Because let's just get out of here, brother. The power block, I felt, was the least interesting besides the Mizunami Hamada match I went 1 or 2 out of 3 on, depending on my feeling that day. as I get to that, let's see, we are now, oh, the results of that block. Well, it's Mizunami with 6 points, the clear winner, Hamada at 5, so it came down to that match between those two. Shimono at 5, which is quite surprising. She just beat the nobodies in the end. So the 5 is a little deceptive there. Hoshi got 4 and Ayuki got 0. She got the big goose egg in this tournament. So that leads us to the Battle Royal, which took place on July 1st, which saw Ohada win. And that'll take us into the Korakuen Hall on July 16th. 907 people failing to break 1,000, but they got damn close. And to this point, it was one of their best attendances in company history. And it didn't involve a retirement show. This was the culmination of all their hard work and putting together a good tour and momentum off of the retirement tour of Toshimatsu, and Ran Yuyu is on that as well. She's not in Wave. She's hanging out in Oz Academy these days. And so we had, for this show, a trios opener of Black Dahlia, consisting of Cherry and Hanako Nakamori. Tsukasa Fujimoto's thrown in there because of the group. Defeat Ayayuki, Hamako Hoshi, and Sawaka Shimono. Nice little 6 minute opener. And then we get to our first semi-final match. It's Ayumi Kurihara defeating Yumi Oka. 15 minutes. This was fantastic. Nice little 2 out of 3 match. Very much enjoyed this. Not quite of the level of the Tsukasa Fujimoto Yumi Oka match, but in this, well, the Yumi Oka Ohada match was very good as well. I already spoke about that, but Ohada, she's very good. Oh, I'm sorry. Kurihara and Oka is this. Oh my god, so many matches all running together. Kurihara defeats Oka, 15 minutes. This was great. She's hitting Baldo bombs off the top rope. There's lots of near falls. No veteran, big league, no selling. God, I had that Oka Fujimoto and then Oka Ohada match just mixed up in my head. Maybe it's because everyone's OH names, but Kurihara's suplexing her all around the ring, holding her shoulder a couple times. So there's where my theory of injuries coming into play. And look, they pulled out all the big stops. This was better than the Fujimoto Oka match, but that means Oka has two of the best matches in this tournament at this point in time. And then the Kana Kurihara match was also up there as well. So Kurihara wins, the crowd really reacts, and I'm kind of torn on the finish exactly, where Kurihara couldn't quite put her away. Oka was getting the best of her. But in the context of how the match played out, this is why I'm leaning towards I'm okay with it, is because when Oka's hitting top rope Baldo bombs, and every time a momentum shift goes and Oka hits a giant big boot and puts her down, they're kicking out at one, they're showing a lot of fighting spirit, and then Oka just has that little bit more because she's hit the bigger moves. Kurihara pulls off this, she gets out of the tiger suplex, and then she twists the arms around like it's a dance number, and then pulls her in for a wacky Joshi roll of sorts, and pins her 1-2-3 to move on. Crowd, big pop there. I think it worked in the context. I think it did. Would I have rather Kurihara suplex this woman and pins her 1-2-3 with her hand in the air? Yeah, sure. But this did work because of the match layout. Mizunami defeats Misaki Iwata, 14 minutes, 40 seconds. And yes, this was good. This worked. But it definitely had a lot less heat because it's that battle royal. When you win that battle royal, it just feels so unearned. And you get, you when you win the block and you're up against someone who didn't win theirs, it's a fault of the three block system and forcing yourself onto having that fourth person for a semifinal. But the thing is, they had the answer there. They could have done Kurihara Mizunami in the semifinals, and then you had the decision block match of Oka Fujimoto for this show. And then you could have had a Kurihara Oka final instead. That's not the route they went. Mizunami and Ohada had a hell of a match. Went 2 out of 3 on this one. I actually went 3 out of 3 on the Oka Kurihara match. 2 out of 3 on the Mizunami Ohada. And Ohada, big match. Big match Ohada for Catch the Wave. Very good. And Mizunami, she's out of the Sendai singlet. She probably still has it underneath all these clothes that she's got on now, but this was great. Mizunami's reached that. She's very much improved from 2011. She's finally coming out of her shell and doing a lot of moves. She's very motivated. Her repertoire and moveset is very dynamic and mixed now. So she's not as one-dimensional, just the wrestler from Sendai that a lot of them look like for the first 4 years of their career, maybe even 5, depending. So Mizunami really on a roll and growing in this scene, and it's easy to see why. She doesn't look like anyone else. She moves just as good as anyone else at the top, and the pace that she's developing is someone who can't be unnoticed. Shuri defeats Hirota in a 4-minute match. Kana defeats Hamada in 16 minutes in the semifinals, which is a huge match in the grand scheme. So I think this was their kind of consolation prize that they did the tournament. They get to go out there and have a big 16-minute match to fill out. And I really like the match times throughout a lot of these. That when you, if you want to make a tournament feel important, you don't do short matches. This isn't WWF King of the Ring in 1998 with interference and everything ends in 4 minutes with mid-carders, right? Yes, that's also a 2023 Stardom Catch the Wave dig. Or, Stardom Catch the Wave. Tongue-tied. Stardom Cinderella. God, if there... Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of draws, so might as well be Catch the Wave. Stardom Catch the Wave. Anyways. So, Kana Hamada. That's a 2 out of 3 match right there. 16 minutes, 40 seconds. Highly recommend that one. Does dive into my criticism of the Hamada style right now, but she did break out of that a couple times, and... This is what I was talking about with Kana throughout the Catch the Wave tournament. She never got out of first gear. She played the teacher. Well, she wasn't no teacher in this one. She was hard-hitting. She was doing all of her moves. I mean, the only other time we saw this version of Kana was at the Kana Kurihara opening match. There was a tag team title scramble match for God knows what reason. This was no good. Miyu Shirai and Shu Shibutani trying to get the titles, along with Mooka Harui teaming with Yu Yamagata, Gami and Nakagawa. Look, Harui and Yamagata are eliminated, or they eliminate Shibutani and Miyu Shirai immediately in 2 minutes, so why did you bother with the scramble? And then Gami and Nakagawa basically beat up Harui for 14 minutes, and Yu Yamagata comes in there to does some moves every now and again. Not a big fan of the Yu Yamagata style. Kind of comes across like a Konami type wrestler, but not as dynamic in the ring. And I'm critical of Konami, but we get to the finals. It's Ayumi Kurihara defeating Ryu Mizunami 21 minutes. Guys, Joshi match of the year so far. 3 out of 3 recommendation. It's better than Nanai Mako from Stardom. It's better than... This is all, of course, my opinion. I guess I got to preface that because some people don't like that, I guess. Or I have to say it. But anyways. It's better than the Natsuki Tayo Io Shirai high-speed match. Let's see. I got a few others here that got the full 3. Kurihara Shu Shibutani from January 4th. In 2012. That's why I was disappointed with the Catch the Wave match. It didn't meet that. Yes, it's technically better than the Aikawa Shida match that I went 3 out of 3. That was from a different perspective. And then, yeah, it's better than the Kurigaki Hariyama tag title match from JWP Mania X that I recently covered a couple podcasts ago as well. Was that just the last one? That might have been just the recent episode. Yeah, it was. So, that's big praise. And I have been critical of 2012 just not producing enough good matches to really get you off your feet and motivated. But for Catch the Wave, especially at the end, to produce multiple matches, getting 2s and 3s out of 3 out of me. So we're getting to the 3.5 to 4.25 star range here, if you want to do the Meltzer scale, Big Dave scale. I think that will also help Catch the Wave for 2013. And that's the best way to get these people over. You put them in the best matches that they can, have them show out, make the matches feel important, and goddamn it, was Kurihara and Mizunami. They came out of this tournament looking stronger than ever. And there's legit people that can go after Kurihara as some sort of top contender person. Because Wave and the scene still don't really have singles titles yet. There's not much to fight over. So in the post-match, Kurihara cuts a promo wanting to face Hamada in a singles match. Which seems odd because she had just lost the match earlier to Kana on that very show. Crowd popped a little bit. It wasn't really much, but again, you got to allocate your wrestlers and book them accordingly for things like this, and I don't think they accomplished quite what they were hoping for. So, you know what? I'm going to spoil myself here and the podcast. Do they, in fact, face each other in a singles match in 2012 in Wave? So, we go to Hamada. Yes, so they will face each other in a singles match on the Wave 5th anniversary show, Sail Away, which I believe was at Corken Hall the last few times. Well, now they're going to Shikiba First Ring. Where is that on the show? Placement. That showed your 405. That's not bad, actually. It is third from the top. Oh, boy. Not quite what you want out of your reigning Catch the Wave champion, but, ooh. Do I have this show down on my watch list for Wave? I got, yes, I do. So we will be covering that show. Okay, I already got thoughts. So Kurihara Mizunami, hell of a match. Go watch it. It's in the drive, Joshi Drive. If you're subscribed to the Patreon, of course, easy access, Catch the Wave 2012. Kurihara and Mizunami just beat the hell out of each other. Lots of big moves, big near falls. Mizunami's best match of her career. I wouldn't say this is Kurihara's best match of her career, but it's definitely the best of 2012 that I've seen out of her, and they even have awards, and this is just absolutely perplexing. It's like kind of consolation prizes. There's no way this is serious, or even I can't fathom fans voting this, but here we go. Well, Technique Award, Tsukasa Fujimoto. Sure. I think she's more than deserving of that one for her role in the Black Dahlia block, being the only one to really put on consistently good matches. Outstanding Performance Award, Sawaka Shimono. No idea. I don't get it. Fighting Spirit Award, Hamako Hoshi. Her matches were terrible. She also got Best Performance Award. And when Gammy presented her, like, two awards, the ham was, like, shocked. She just couldn't believe it. And then she does her, like, grab your pose or whatever. If it was Fighting Spirit, I would probably have given it to Shuri or even Shushi Batani. Give it to someone on your fucking roster, for Christ's sake. Best Performance? I mean, Yumi Yoka, she was right there. She probably had the most, or Ryu Mizunami. But they didn't do that. And then Best Battle Award, they went with Ayumi Kurihara versus Shuri, the June 24th. And that wasn't even in my, like, top four of that block. So I was pretty, I was so perplexed when I saw that award. I actually went back and rewatched that match, and I just didn't see it. It definitely didn't strike me as best bout material, especially considering both semifinal matches in the finals. But there you have it. So they give... I know they gave a medal to Oka and Ohada, and I didn't really get why. It was the camera just went to them, and they took it. Maybe that was the actual best bout, but even then, I guess that would be better than the Kurihara Shuri match, but regardless, that was Catch the Wave. I thought it was a success, maybe not a resounding success, but they definitely have momentum. And let's play a little game here, because we got to build to the August 26th show, so this is what we'll do. They got the Summer Fiesta. They got four shows before the fifth anniversary show. They're back at Shinkiba First Ring. There's an elimination gauntlet match that goes to a draw. That's weird. A 15-minute draw with Gammy opens the show in a three-way. That's also weird. Shinkiba First Ring 191, no DQ match with Osaka Joshi Pro. 20 minutes. What are these cards? A Gammy Mizunami lumberjack match against Kurihara Ida? I don't get this. I don't get this at all. And then the go-home show before... Well, no, there's another Osaka show that they do before. Okay, so the go-home show in Tokyo. Ran Yu defeats Miki Ida in 50... What are we building to? I don't get this. And then Osaka is a 30-minute draw of Kurihara and Gami against Kana and Oka, with Ayaka Hamada defeating Shushi Batani in the semi-main event. What the? Okay. Okay. What did... Okay, what are these matches they have lined up for that, for their fifth anniversary show that they're not confident to book Corkin in? Because, no. Oh, no. Aja Kong's on the card. Gami and Nakagawa are not defending the tag titles. Masaki Iwata and Yumi Oka have a match. And there's a 29-man battle royal in the main event. Yeah, okay. That's not good. So I would imagine the 405 is a good number for Shikiba first ring, but you could have done better in Shinchuku face, and coming off a successful Catch the Wave. See, they didn't try to build it either. They just did matches. All right, Wave. I'm back to criticizing your booking. Catch the Wave was good. The lead up to Sail Away 5, not good. There's the final. Our next episode will be J Ribbon, which is the joint JWP Ice Ribbon show that took place at Yokohama Radiant Hall. Looking forward to that. And then we're back at Stardom X Stardom 2012, which is a compilation DVD I got. I don't think it's on Stardom World. Kurihara finally wins something big. Means a lot to her. She calls out Hamada. One would think that Kurihara should win that match. And maybe they're building toward... When do they get their... when do they get their title? I think that's 2013. But is it early 2013 that's what I'm wondering. Yes, it's early 2013 in March. So one would think that Kurihara and various Catch the Wave winners of the past would be in the contention for the title right out of the gate. So that would be like Kana, Oka, Gami, I guess, and Kurihara. So that's Catch the Wave 2012. A few good matches in there. I really enjoyed the White Tails block a lot, even though it probably sounds like, and I was overly critical of it all, but easily their best. I think it's easily their best tournament out of the four so far now, three that we've done on this podcast. Again, if you're signed up with the Patreon, thank you. Look forward to more of these twice a month. And if you're listening on the All Japan Women Destiny podcast, consider subscribing, getting access to that Joshi 2010s drive that I keep up with for easy access and good quality content there. That's how we keep this rolling, and it's good motivation for me and to interact with fans to keep this journey going. Joshi 2010s, journey out of the dark ages. See you next time, everybody.